We have been spending a good amount of time this summer talking about growing and preserving food, and we do have more of that to come before the snow flies. But for today, here at the beginning of September, I feel like it is time to pause from those topics, although it's all a little bit intertwined, isn't it? And begin to shift our conversation to making sure that those of us who are interested in doing so take the time now to get our pantries and our homes prepared for winter. Welcome to episode 14 of the Hearth and Home podcast. I am Heather, and this is a place to honor, celebrate, and share all things related to hearth and home. We all have different approaches for stocking our pantries, filling our larders. What works for one person is not going to necessarily work for another, but yet we still have this ability to glean ideas and inspiration as well as encouragement from one another, no matter how we go about it personally. There are those of us who grow the majority of our own food or source it in bulk locally. Some of us hang out on Amazon late into the night and just kind of shop that way and have things delivered to our door. Others just use the grocery store and whatever is right available to you in your communities. Some of us really tap into the local farmers market scene and try to buy bulk there. There are many ways to go about this, but I think that for most of us, if you are here in Hearth and Home, you are probably inclined to put back a bit, if not a lot, for winter, for unknown times, you know, just to be ready for what life is going to bring your way. I am titling this episode, Your Plan to Fill the Larder, because I want you to think of it in that way. Even though I, you know, will share with you here kind of how I go about it. I mean, I think you know a little bit of that now, but just sort of we're in that season, so it's definitely in the forefront for me. But I hope that your takeaway is not to mimic or duplicate what we do here in our home for what works for us in this season of life, but rather to take the little bits that might work for you, inspire you. Maybe a light bulb goes off and you get another idea to go in a different direction that would work better for your family. Whatever it is, this episode is not about looking to prepare your pantry for winter in one specific way. It is rather to inspire you to develop your plan to fill the larder in your home. Here at our place, we operate what I refer to as a homestead pantry. Prior to this past year and a half that we have all been living through, I would say that I didn't really worry too much about keeping more than maybe 6 months or so, 6 months to 12 months of just shelf-stable dry goods on hand. And because my motto for preparedness in general is always to plan for what you've been through plus a bit more. I have now been through a global pandemic and lockdowns and, you know, all those kinds of uncertainties and, you know, like all of you. And so I have taken that into consideration and I kind of am inching my way upward to more like 18 months or so of dry goods. The truth for us, though, is that the bulk of our diet actually isn't from a dry goods pantry. The bulk of our diet is from the freezer and from our cold storage for vegetables or fresh vegetables during the gardening season. In addition to that, we do rely on some home canned goods for our garden produce. Certain things just sort of work better in jars than they do frozen. Pie fillings, canned peaches, all kinds of tomato products, things like that. We do also keep some canned vegetables and meat on hand as well. Those are more for our emergency backups, you know, power outages, things like that, which we do have plenty of here. It's not our first choice. So on a good day, a regular Tuesday, I'm not going to necessarily reach for canned carrots. I'm going to reach for fresh carrots pulled from our cold storage or from the garden, depending on the time of year. But it is true that there is still plenty that we do not produce here, and we need to buy that in. Things like dish soap, laundry soap, supplies for making bar soap, things that we might need for baking, spices that we don't grow here. And of course, I do have a small section in our pantry, and because I am upping my timeline a little bit, pushing it out to about 18 months of dry goods, there's a little bit more variety that I am now bringing in that could supplement us or people that we care about in times of need. And so I'm not doing a tour of that for you today. I will absolutely be doing a full pantry tour after harvest, right when we're ready to kind of batten down the hatches for winter and things are totally full. I will take you on a tour. I gave a tour of my winter homestead pantry last winter. I actually did one kind of at the beginning of winter, and then there was another one at the end of winter, so you could kind of see how depleted things were. And I will be sure to link to those in the resources for today's post in case you have not had a chance to check those out yet. Those will actually, maybe give you some ideas as you prepare to fill your larder for the season ahead. So now is the time for all of us to be thinking about how we're going to go about budgeting, securing, sourcing, all of those things, organizing the supplies that we might need to have on hand for winter. It's funny because in my mind and in my practice, there is always a pantry to reach from. It's never empty. There are definitely lean months, and I am okay with that because we produce so much food here. That just kind of makes sense for our system. But yet there is always flour to reach to. There is always vanilla, all of these things. So you can do this any time of year, but there is just something about autumn that invites or evokes that sort of inner squirrel that we all seem to have. So it feels like a timely topic for right now. I do tend to revisit our pantry around the first of the year. It's just sort of one of those times that we are also naturally inclined to check in on things and see what needs tending to. Other than that, I don't really think about the pantry a whole lot until we get to autumn. And this is the time where I really like to have things beefed up. And we have a variety of ways that we do that. And so for today, I'm just going to try to share quickly with you the various things that I'm working on to make sure that we go into this winter with a really topped off pantry. And again, really building it out, at least for dry goods, not necessarily for freezer goods or foods that would go into our cold storage. Anything that can last for 18 months, that's kind of my goal right now for all consumables in our home. And that includes, the toilet paper and all of those sort of things and toothpaste and things like that. But for today, I'm focusing more on the food-related pantry. So I have been ordering from Azure Standard. I have placed two orders so far. This is new to me. This is not a company that normally delivers in our region that I live, but they have started that in this past year. And so I'm really just beginning to get acquainted with that system, how I think it works for our family. So far, my impressions are quite good. I'm really ordering such basic things because that's just generally what we need to, but also a couple of convenience things. So I'm ordering things like wheat berries, rice, cane sugar, olive oil, and a few fun convenience items. They have a pretty decent quality, like ramen noodle type soup that I ordered a few cases of. And there's like six per case, so it's not an exorbitant amount. But I sent a few to my daughter's house, so if she has a power outage, she can have something really quick to cook. She has a little butane burner stove for power outages, so she can heat water, no problem. I ordered some crackers, just those kinds of things that, yeah, I can make crackers, and we do often, but sometimes you just, it's a Saturday night and you feel like cheese and crackers and you're not going to be making your sourdough crackers at that last minute hour. So crackers we ordered, beans, dry beans, things like that. So it's pretty basic. It's not a very exciting order. I mean, I see some of the things that people order and it's like really enticing. I don't really need those things from them, but I am pleased so far with what I have ordered and just the process. I think it's a really neat model. The other company that I do like to order from is Essential Organics. And if you live in the US, then you get free shipping on orders over $100. That's fantastic. I mean, that really helps a lot. I will say that for the most part, Azure prices are much lower. And I think the quality is comparable. I mean, you know, you have to try things for yourself. Like for instance, I tried white chocolate chips and milk chocolate chips from Azure, and I really did not like either of them. But we do like the chocolate from Essential Organics. So, you know, you have to just kind of play around and order small quantities if you're just going to be sampling something. And then you can decide moving forward if you would like to continue ordering or choose a different company, etc. So those are the two main companies that I order our dry goods from. We live in a food desert where I am in the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. So there are some natural food stores in driving distance, but not like what most people are used to. I mean, Trader Joe's is 2 hours away. I don't even know if there is a Whole Foods in the state. We just don't have anything here. We have nothing. When I say we have nothing, I mean we have nothing here. But we do have a few small natural food stores, and they're great to support, and we do support them. But if you're looking to buy really large quantity, sometimes it's just easier, and it can really help your budget to go through some of these other companies. And that's okay. You know, you have to decide what works for your family. Smart Source Seafood is a company out of Alaska that I order from not every year, but, you know, every couple of years I sort of indulge our family in what I think is like such an incredibly nutritious food. And that is wild caught Alaskan salmon and halibut. So we placed an order for this year. It will arrive in September. It was one of their best. I mean, this is like a direct company. This is the fisherman that I order from, and he and his crew have had the best year in Bristol Bay that they have ever had, I think, on recorded history. That was just an amazing fishing year. So I'm looking forward to that coming. Of course, we raise our own chicken here. We have 50 meat birds on pasture right now as I speak. Those will be ready for the freezer at the end of October. We have half a beef coming, and that will be here in November, and we will pick that up from a local farm, and that is an entirely grass-fed beef. We currently are raising pork, but the pork that we are raising is slow growing, so which is a good thing, and it will not be ready until April for butcher. So for this year, what I have been doing is every time I go to the feed store, which is about 40 minutes from here, I always make sure they have cash on hand, and I go to a farm stand that is close to the feed store, and I stock up on pork. And just, you know, a little bit at a time. Her prices are really good. The meat is excellent. And, you know, bacon, sausage, roasts, chops, things like that. And that's a really good way for me to slowly build up our pork supply for winter. I went to the orchard earlier in the summer for cherries, and we produced a really nice amount of cherry pie filling. And of course, you all know we ordered our peaches, and those have been taken care of. So we have plenty of peaches. We do have a lot of apples here. They're wonderful sauce apples. They're wonderful for canning the apples if you want to just kind of have apples on your oatmeal over the winter, things like that. They're good for cold storage. They're not like the perfect pie apple though. So I will be going to the orchard for probably just a bushel of apples in a few weeks, and those will be used for specifically for pies. I'll get, you know, some Honey Crisp, maybe some, you know, my preferences actually change on perfect pie apples through the years, but I will see what they have and choose some really good pie apples. Also, earlier in the year, I picked up blueberries and strawberries and have frozen all of those. We have strawberries planted this year, but they won't really be ready until next year. And our blueberry bushes, we have, I think, 50 of them. They are still quite young, so they need a few more years. You know what? I think I'll also pick up some pears when I'm at the orchard and process some of those for winter. I like pears. Other than that, we don't really buy in vegetables. Our garden just cranks them out for us all summer long, and I preserve as they come in, and that's it. We don't eat fresh tomatoes in winter. We don't eat fresh cucumbers or peppers or any of that in the winter. It's just kind of lost its appeal to us through the years. The other thing I did recently was go to the grocery store, and this was last week. And I stocked up on things like pasta, white vinegar, macaroni and cheese. That is definitely our power outage fun convenience food. Like if I have macaroni and cheese on the shelf, I just feel like that's kind of the bulk of my so-called emergency pantry, you know, like the quick cook and eat kind of things. I bought a few cans of frozen orange juice because, believe it or not, the holidays will be here soon, and we have like bigger, more special breakfasts, and we tend to like to have orange juice served during those breakfasts. A variety of cheese, butter, and a big 20-pound bag of flour. And of course, while I was there, I got a few cases of canning jars because they had them. And I also picked up a new drain plug for my kitchen sink because ours didn't work anymore. We needed a replacement, so I was happy to find that at the grocery store. Weekly or biweekly or monthly grocery shopping is not typical for me. I do have something that I buy every single week, and that is raw milk. I buy it directly from a farm close to us, and my budget for that is $20 a week. Sometimes I only spend $15. It depends on if I need to make yogurt or not. And so that is my weekly grocery budget, is about $20, between $15 and $20. But here's the thing, because I get asked this a lot, like, well, if you buy a whole half a cow, that is so much money, and how do you ever afford that? I try to emphasize this as much as I can, but I know sometimes it can slip through the cracks of conversation. It took me a decade to get to this point. And here's the thing that you need to remember, and this was a piece of advice I was given so long ago. And the person that gave me this piece of advice was equating it to automobiles, but I understand that, and it is true, but I am also equating it to groceries. He had said to me, and this was when I was a young adult and was just sort of figuring my way, he said, you are always going to have either a car payment, or you will be saving monthly a bit of money to buy your next car. Either way, you're always going to have a car for the rest of your life. It's rather expensive. It's always going to have to be there. And yep, you're going to have a car payment, or you're going to be saving monthly to buy a new one. And it's true. I equate that same kind of logic to groceries, at least the way I acquire groceries. Yes, I only put $20 a week out of pocket to groceries on a regular basis. But I'm still socking money away all the time, every week or month, depending on, you know, it would be different for everybody. I tend to do it monthly. And so when the big things do come up, there is an earmarked amount for that. So when I just went to the grocery store, it was under $200. And I do not recall the last time. It's probably been 6 months since I spent any money like that at the grocery store. We do go in for cheese more frequently, but that is not, you know, that would be like $20, $30. And we also buy cheese directly from farms here as well. So you can see how it's just a shift of spending habits. And I had mentioned earlier that it took me about a decade to get to this point where my budget just completely shifted from needing a little bit every week to go buy the weekly groceries versus socking it away and then being able to just purchase the bigger things in quantity at one time and having that money set aside to do that. If you haven't read this before in anything that I've written, the two main ways that I got ahead in those early days of wanting to shift from like weekly grocery shopping to just being able to stock up a few times a year instead. The two biggest factors for me were, one, anytime I received any bit of gift money, whether it be from my husband or my parents for Mother's Day or my birthday or whatever, our anniversary, my parents would give us money for our anniversary. And it was never a lot, but it was like, you know, $50 or $100. I always took that to the grocery store or to the farm. And I just bought something, whether it was one bushel of apples, one case of butter, just something to take that one grocery item that I did purchase regularly off of my list for a long period of time. Another way we would get little chunks of money to foster this way of stocking our pantry versus weekly grocery shopping was we would have tag sales, and they were never amazing. Tag sales are not usually very good anymore. So even if we made just a couple of $100 at our tag sale, I would take that money, same thing, take it to the grocery store or to the farm and use it to invest in one or a few items in quantity. And then boom, those items came off of our grocery list, just like that butter did, just like those apples did. But the thing is I wouldn't change my grocery budget. And just over time, I was literally going to the checkout at the grocery store, needing to buy less every week. But we still allowed for X amount of dollars in our budget. So if I wasn't handing it over to the cashier at the grocery store or to the farmer at the farmer's market, we were keeping it in, I literally had a zipper pouch, and we were letting those funds build up. And then when it was a substantial amount, I could go and buy, you know, 6 whole chickens from the farm. And that was really big for us to be able to do that. Over time, I was buying, you know, a dozen chickens. If you happen to come into a windfall of money of a couple thousand dollars, great, you can do this a lot faster than I did. But for me, it took many, many years. It's like a snowball effect. So while I am not really precise about how much money every week or every month we have to allot for groceries, I still make it a priority to always be putting money aside. So when it does come time to place a larger order through Essential Organics or Azure Standard or buying half a cow or stocking up on some seafood or placing our chick order at the hatchery or going to the grocery store a few times a year and stocking up on the things that I can't really get anywhere else and we don't produce here, those funds do need to exist. And for us, it was just sort of a transfer over the years from socking it away to do it in fewer trips throughout the year in greater quantity versus going every week with a smaller amount of money. And I am sure, because the question is going to come up, well, but you raise so much of your own food, do you really spend much money at the grocery store still? And the answer is, of course we do. Not really at the grocery store, but in general, of course we do. Because when you are raising your own food, it isn't free. Even our vegetable garden, I mean, the amount of resources, dollars, that I have invested in that soil is a little bit astounding to me. It would absolutely be cheaper for me to go to the Walmart freezer section and buy frozen vegetables. Yes, it would be cheaper, but I'm not only concerned about things being cheaper. Budgets are real, but I am after a certain quality of food and I believe a certain quality of life. I think there is greater security in the way we procure most of our food. But I don't know that I am at the point yet, or if I ever will be, where I can affirmatively say that it is less expensive. I'm not sure. I don't think I'm there yet. but I'm also not a super numbers-oriented person, so somebody more precise than I am could probably parse that out better. I just know that homesteading is not free, and we tend to lump, you know, I mentioned earlier using what I would have used 8 years ago at the grocery store, I now use that money to buy chicks, and that's pretty crazy, like, if you think about it. So there's a lot of crossover between our so-called grocery budget and our homesteading budget. Aside from these mentioned areas of securing and filling our larder for the coming winter ahead, and also just because in general I'm looking to expand our food storage a bit, we have also been focusing on just getting things cleaned. I mean, I really believe in this. Like, a lot of people will ask me how I inventory my supplies and whatnot. And the truth is, I don't really have a sophisticated inventory system because we operate such a rotating working pantry. It's not a pantry for doomsday. It's a pantry for today. And I just find that it works better for us to be in it, which we are naturally because it is a working pantry. So a few times a year, I go down and I've got a bucket of hot water and some vinegar, and I'm just giving everything a good wipe down, moving things to the front that I know we need to prioritize, just generally organizing, condensing, wiping cans, wiping shelves, and freshening things up. And when you do this regularly, as we do, like I said, about 3 times a year or so, you just naturally get a sense of your inventory. I always have a piece of paper when I'm down there and a pen, and I will make a list as I'm going through and wiping shelves and whatnot. Like, oh, we're kind of low on peanut butter. Let's put that on the list. Or, oh, you know what? Green split peas. We don't have too much of that. So add that to the list. And I always leave my little pantry tidy cleaning sessions with a list of items that I would like to replenish with. And I might not always do it right at that time. I might just keep that list for the next time that I'm doing like kind of a bigger pantry filling haul. But for the most part, that's really how I inventory. So we're kind of in that mode right now of cleaning, tidying, organizing, purging, and as a result, also doing inventory at the same time. So how about you? I would love to know or get you thinking about how you are going to go about filling your larder for the winter months ahead. Now, whether you are going to grow and preserve your own food, hit up the farmer's market for big boxes of produce that you can then process at home, rely on your local grocery store, or order some things online, whatever your method is, it is a good time of year to start readying your space, visiting your pantry, whether it's just a tiny little shelf in the corner of your kitchen or something larger, whatever you have, get those shelves wiped down, take a look at what you have, organize your supplies, and as shortages reveal themselves to you, make a note of it on a list so that when you are able to, you can stock up. And my biggest recommendations to you, if you are somebody who is pretty much going the grocery store route, which I think most people probably are, go ahead and try to set aside an extra $10 or $20 a week, if you are able to add something to your pantry. I am more of the mindset that I would rather add one item in larger quantity than 12 different things that cost, you know, a dollar each. That's just my method. I think it visually sort of adds up quicker, and so you feel like you're getting somewhere. It just works better for me visually. So maybe you are going to buy 5 pounds of dry beans. That's a great thing to throw into your cart 1 week just as an extra, and that's going to go into your pantry. If your family uses flour and that's something that you buy regularly at the grocery store, buy an extra 2 or 3 bags if you can. Maybe you also have a really great farm stand near you and you are used to spending a certain amount of money there every week or every other week. Maybe you can start adding an extra $10 to that visit and just buying an extra piece of meat or an extra 10-pound bag of carrots and just padding your reserves that way. Whatever your approach is, now is the time to squirrel away all of those foods that only grow this time of the year. Another big thing we're doing right now is foraging blackberries. It is the season. They are prolific this year, and we are stocking up. September. I love this month. It is a time for us to slowly begin to draw inward, to fill our larder, to start thinking about the quieter, more restful days ahead. Before we depart today, I would like to share a story with you. A story that was written by a family member of mine. He is a cousin. He was actually my paternal grandmother's first cousin. His name was Lucian. And he is the keeper of our family stories, at least that one leg of my family ancestry. During Lucian's retirement, he took on the hobby of genealogy, as so many people do. He traced my father's mother's roots back to a village in France, and my family came from there through Canada and are French-Canadian. Although my family is entirely settled in Eagle Lake, Maine, it's actually a French-speaking town, and in many ways you feel more like you are in what I've always thought of Canada to be when you are in Eagle Lake, Maine, than in many places of Canada, if that makes sense. Very French, very Acadian, and the culture there is very deep. My father's own first language was French, and both of his parents were from the same small town of Eagle Lake, Maine, and they spoke entirely French. They did speak English as well, but French was the primary language at home, even when I was a young girl, and they were living in Connecticut at this time. Somewhere along the way, in Lucian's retirement, he took it upon himself to record stories, to record his own memories, to do the research, to record other people's stories, and he put all of this into two books, basically. And we all have them. All of my family members have these books. Their production is simple but valuable, and they are put together in the way that church cookbooks are often put together, you know, that spiral binding down the side. One of them is small, about a 5x7, kind of that typical church cookbook size, and the other one is larger, about 8.5x11 size. And they're just so special to all of us, and the stories that are within them, I treasure. The one that I would like to share with you today is called Life on the Farm, and it is Lucian's telling of visiting Eagle Lake, Maine, because his mother, who was the sister of my grandmother's father, would make the trip up to Eagle Lake in the summer to visit her parents on the family farm. And so these parents would be my great-great-grandparents, who I never did have the opportunity to meet, although I was very fortunate to know my paternal great-grandparents, three of them, for most of my childhood. So that was really a treat. And in this story that I'm about to read, you'll hear of Uncle Eddie, and that was my great-grandfather. I called him Pepe, and I have many memories of him. So it's fun to read about him in these pages, even though I read about him as Lucian's uncle. He was my great-grandfather. And when I say Lucian and his family would travel to Eagle Lake in the summer to visit family, it's because they, along with many of Lucian's parents' generation, did leave Eagle Lake for more opportunity, as they say, and settled in southern parts of Maine or in my own grandparents in Connecticut. A lot of my family did come down to Connecticut, but I also have a lot of family still in Eagle Lake, Maine, and it is where my own parents went to retire and lived there for 5 or 6 years. It is a beautiful place, and it holds deep ancestry for me. So this story that I'm about to read you, Lucian is writing about his summer trip to Eagle Lake, so that is fun, but he also dips into tales of harvest season and just the winter time and just that aspect of getting ready for that. So my great-great-grandparents, Marguerite and Samuel, had the family farm, and this was a traditional farm that was horse powered for many, many years. Finally, in I think the late 1940s, they got a tractor, and that was a really big deal. But it was a very traditional farm where you pretty much only brought in sugar, coffee, tea, salt. When I read this to you, you'll understand that this was a true working farm. So I have always felt a kinship and a connection to this leg of my family, this somehow DNA-driven drive to have my hands in the soil and produce what I can for myself. And I know that for them, this was a necessity. If they did not do this, there would be starvation. For me, it is an absolute choice, and I get that. But it is still in my fiber. And I'm also just incredibly grateful that I had a family member to write down a book filled with stories, two books actually, filled with stories like the one I am about to read you. So I hope you enjoy this, and I hope that it evokes a connection maybe to your own family in some way, because most of us are really only a couple of generations removed from a life that was driven more by production than it was consumption. The date of this story is sometime during the Great Depression, one of those summers. And as we listen to this story, I'd like you to take note of the bounty that existed on my family farm in very remote, very northern Maine, right at the Canadian border, where they have maybe at best a 90-day growing season, probably less back then. This was a hard life, but hunger was not something they knew. Without further ado, Life on the Farm by Lucian. On April 15th, 1929, President Roosevelt called a special session of Congress to deal with the mounting problems of the nation's economy. In particular, farmers were becoming desperate for financial relief, and the tariff needed revision. On October 24, 1929, the New York Stock Exchange saw some 16,000 shares sold at declining prices. Black Tuesday, as this day was called, was the most catastrophic day in the market's history and foretold of the Great Depression to come. My father worked for the Fuller Holloway Company from the time he got out of military service in 1919 until 1927, when he accepted a better-paying job with the Cushnock Paper Company. He worked on the grinders at this paper company until it shut down due to the Depression in 1933. It was common during these years for a large number of workers to ask for their annual vacation during the month of July. In addition, paper mills, textile mills, and the shoe shops shut down for needed maintenance and necessary repairs on machinery for a week or two in July. Since my father was not part of a repair or maintenance crew, we were able to take our annual family vacation for the first 2 weeks in July. This was our chance to visit my mother's relatives in Eagle Lake. My memories of our visits to the Samards in Eagle Lake are some of the happiest memories of my childhood. First, our Dodge sedan would always be in tip-top shape and raring to go. It would have to carry us 300 miles, over paved roads, some with frost heaves from the previous winter, and over gravel roads too. About a week before we left on our trip up north, my mom would pack enough clothes for the two-week visit to last us for a month. On the evening before our trip, she would pack a big lunch, including bottles of root beer, on ice. The long trip at 45 miles an hour from Augusta to northern Maine meant 7 to 8 hours of some pretty rough riding. This lunch would have to keep our bodies and souls happy until we would reach Pepe Samuel Samard's farm in Eagle Lake. During the trip, my mother would tell us about Pepe Samuel's farm. There were several horses, many cows, quite a few pigs, lots of chickens, and a few sheep. There was a dog and several cats. The closer we got to Eagle Lake, the more excited we became. Before arriving, my mother would remind us to be on our best behavior at all times. What excitement! We would arrive and the grandparents, the aunts and uncles, and the cousins were so happy to see us, and we were so happy to see them. The hugs and kisses all around took quite a while. We were going to have such a good and fun time together. Suddenly, someone rang a cowbell and hollered that supper was ready. There was a real big table set up in the large kitchen with an enormous amount and variety of food that could feed an army. The eating arrangement was systematic and well organized. In no time at all, everyone had eaten to their heart's content and the leftover food was put away. The female crew washed and wiped the dishes, and Mamay Marguerite put them away. Afterwards, the entire family gathered in the large living room for storytelling, music, and just a good time. On occasions, Pepe Simard started telling us about life on the farm. He told us about the never-ending work that started before dawn and continued until dark. There were jobs for everyone in the family. It was a rough life, and parents largely depended on help from the children to get all the work done. All year around, day after day, there was milking the cows, taking care of the milk, separating the cream, and making the butter, among other things. Cleaning the stables was an ongoing chore. Then there was the collecting of eggs from chickens every day. I was still quite young when Pepe and Mamay told me that I was big enough to collect fresh eggs from the chickens in the barn. Mamay said that she would give me a penny for every egg that I brought in. No doubt I didn't want to miss my chance to collect as many pennies as possible, because I began knocking the chickens off their nests to get the eggs. Well, one day Pepe caught me doing this, and he let me know that I should give the chickens a chance to do their job. I got the message. During those evenings after dinner, we heard stories about how in the spring of the year the fields were plowed to produce wheat and other grain. They planted fields of potatoes as well as a good-sized vegetable garden. By midsummer, the big job of haying the fields had to be done. In the fall, it was a matter of harvesting the grain to convert it into flour. It was also time for the big job of picking potatoes. Vegetables from the garden were harvested and canned in quart jars. Later still, some of the cows, chickens, and pigs were slaughtered, and the meat was preserved by canning and/or storing in wooden barrels with layers of snow between the layers of meat. In some cases, pork and other meats were immersed in a salty brine solution. Before cooking meat cured this way, it was necessary to soak it again in fresh plain water to leach out some of the salt. Some of my uncles and older cousins told stories about taking tourists out to fish in the spring and summer and to hunt deer in the fall. They also told stories about when they hunted and fished to provide food at home and about when they trapped for fur pelts in the wintertime to provide additional income for their families. During hard times, after Christmas, Pepe Simard and his eldest son, Eddie, left the farm to go hunt and trap in the wild Allagash region of northern Maine. Mon uncle Eddie told stories about how they left the warmth and comfort of their home during some of the harshest weather of the winter, carrying only salt pork and a few other supplies in a knapsack on their backs and with a pair of snowshoes slung across their bodies. They would have to live off the land in the woods for a couple of months, trapping fur-bearing animals for pelts and killing deer for food. They would use the deer hides for cover from wild animals and the elements, and as blankets to help keep them warm at night. These were great adventure stories for a young boy like me to hear. At some point during the evening, Mamay Marguerite would start to play the accordion, and Ma Tante Gertrude Michaud would play the piano. Pretty soon, some of the family would sing and still others would dance. We all had such a good time. During my years growing up, we made several trips to Pepe Samuel's farm and were always well received. I got to know my Simard uncles and aunts and cousins well. They were always good-hearted and wonderful people to share with and to have fun together. After each of our two-week visits, the Simard family would send us off on our long journey back to Augusta, loaded down with canned jars of deer meat, garden vegetables, and a 50-pound bag of potatoes. These visits not only connected me to my mother's family, but they also taught me a lot about the kind of person I wanted to become in life. The visits with my Eagle Lake relatives and listening to the stories they told were, for me, lessons in the value of hard work, being honest and generous, and of having fun. I hope you enjoyed this story that Lucien has so generously captured and shared for future generations. It is such a gift. This time of year is where it all comes together, where the fruits of our labor, or the amazing fruits of the labor of others, blesses us, sustains us, and gives us the security that we need to endure the winter months ahead. So please join me over in the community to share what you are up to, what you are squirreling away, what you need to acquire, just any tips and tricks and approaches that you might have for filling your larder. We would love to hear your ideas. Mine are only one, and yours are just as valuable, if not more so. So we would love to hear from you guys. Okay, we'll see you over there. Until next time, please take care of yourselves and take care of each other.